Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? History has a way of leaving footprints. Sometimes we have to uncover a lot of information to find them, but they're there. They were left there originally when the history was laid down. But so often, we try to cram so much into history that we miss a lot of it. The average history book is about 888 pages. Part of the reason that I hated history, because I had this big, giant book that did not show representations of me, my family, my acquaintances, my ancestors, and talked about places other than where I was, other than the time frame or time period that I was in. And so I could see no value to be gained by carrying around this heavy, burdensome book. But as I found and grew older, hopefully and wiser, I found out that there is a significant impact to that. If you were to take the most beautiful picture that you have ever seen and leave out, if it's in color, a particular component of the rainbow, it does not look right, is not right, because the fabric of life is a full spectrum. It ranges from the very longest waves to the shortest waves. And this is what gives it its vibrance, its life, its meaning, its ability to talk to you. The ability to communicate with you is done using the full spectrum. But what we find in history is that that spectrum is not full. That's often why when we look at parts of history, they don't appear right. They don't fit. They don't hit our ear just right because they have been rearranged in a way to please someone other than the person that is learning. And it, many times that cannot be corrected because the people have never been exposed to it. What we attempt to do here is to fill in that full, broad spectrum, to give life its ups, its downs. When we travel in our cars, we go up hills, we go down hills, we go around curves. And the same thing happens in life. As a driver of an automobile, I did not appreciate the hills, the curves. There were so many things that I did not appreciate until I had a chance to experience them. As I rode my motorcycle through the countryside, not only could I feel the change of temperature sometimes between the top of the hill, the valley, but I could smell the fragrance of grapes and other crops as they were there. It is a full experience. Unless you have the opportunity to experience that, you are missing out. Sometimes you don't even realize it because you've never been exposed to it. This is the thing that I found as I began to change modes of transportation. And what we attempt to do here is to give you that full experience so that you can understand. Many times I have looked back at what was supposed to be significant events in history that I just absolutely had no interest in, none, zero, zip, until I began to experience and began to understand that most everything has two sides. Even the flattest pancake has sides. And sometimes by knowing what's behind the curtain, we can develop an appreciation. Now, as we go into this program, I'm not sure the audience that we have today, because today is a Super Bowl, and we are seeing history right before our very eyes. And some of you are quite puzzled. What history am I seeing now? And that's sometimes because we confuse history with facts, events that are taking place. We don't realize that we are living history each and every day. But until we understand what it is and how it affects us, we miss that ambience. We miss the subtleties of life that make it so enjoyable, so understandable, so meaningful. What I mean by that is today, the two teams are headed by two black quarterbacks. Okay, big deal. It's a game. But what you don't realize, because sometimes you don't understand the history of events that are taking place, is that there was a time when even the most talented quarterback was overlooked merely because of the color of their skin. I remember in the early days, we had great quarterbacks. We had many of them playing for our historically black colleges and universities. Many of them were breaking into the larger, well-known schools because in many cases they had been excluded from them. We see a period where most people don't realize that at one time the NFL was integrated and then went through a period of 12 years with absolutely zero black players. I'm old enough to remember looking forward to an edition of Ebony every year in which what they did was have a post or an article that featured and showed the picture of every black player in the NFL, everyone. And the number was disparate. At the bottom end of that list was always the Washington Redskins. They were the last all-white team in the league, and there is a reason. Because we have an owner who thinks that he is being, I don't know what he thinks he is, but just the very name of Redskins is derogatory against people that he wouldn't even let on the team. And so he's, in essence, making fun of people. What happened in the way that we integrated this league, and I know that I'm away from my theme, but we're going to get back there. What I'm trying to do is give you some of that backstory, some of that part of history that makes it so interesting and that weaves life into it. As if right now we're looking at a magnificent picture, whether it be a painting, whether it be a photograph, it is something that has meaning to you. But all of a sudden, that picture, that painting, that sculpture, whatever it may be, comes to light. Not only is it speaking to you, but now it's also entertaining your questions. You now understand what's behind it and how it actually affects you. What happened when they went to an all-white team? It wasn't until the Los Angeles Rams, which are back now in Los Angeles, built a stadium with public funds. We had people stand up and say, whoa, wait a minute. You can't have an all-white team in a publicly funded stadium. You cannot do it. And they made the point. They made it dramatically. And so the Rams hired two players, Woody Strode and right off, I forget the other name. At the same time, the Cleveland Browns hired two players. So that is a league which was much abbreviated from what we have now because they had not expanded. had four black players in 1946. 1946 is the year important? Yes, it's important. Why? Because they had integrated in 1946. Nobody remembers it. It was not until 1947, the next year, that Jack Roosevelt, Jackie Robinson integrated or reintegrated National League Baseball, changed the entire future of baseball. What is significant about two black quarterbacks? At one time, you could have been the messiah of a team. You could have had the skills, the talent, the ability, but not the opportunity to lead that team. And that's important because as we look at a team, it is 11 players playing in unison. What if you had a quarterback that said, I will not play if you give any credit to alignment. I will not play if you give any credit to a receiver. That team is not, ain't going to happen, survive very long with a mentality like that. And unless we understand and put that vibrance back into the picture, back into the story that we're telling, back into the fans, back into the stadium, we are missing out on so much. Now let's go back to the Redskins. I, for many years, did not like the Redskins. Had nothing to do with their performance. Where it was is that I lived in South Carolina. The closest two teams to us were the Washington Redskins and the Baltimore Colts. Those were the two games that we got every Sunday. Every Sunday. I understood, I knew the players on both teams. Washington Redskins, zero. Baltimore Colts had players. In fact, I was one of the greatest fans of Big Daddy Lipscomb. He was a defensive tackle, and he was my hero. Okay, I'm weird. I have a defensive lineman as a hero. But that's the way it was. It meant something to me. And so I became a Colt fan until they snuck out of town in the middle of the night. But I digress. What is important and significant to me is that the first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl was Doug Williams. Doug Williams was initially taken by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And what is interesting is that as a starting quarterback, he was paid less than almost every backup quarterback in the entire league. I don't fault Doug for changing teams to get some of the compensation that he should have been getting before. I was just a little miffed that it had to be with the Washington Redskins. But again, we're off on a different note. But I want you to understand that there are times when your feelings are different than mine. There may be reasons. When we look at history, I thought it was the most boring subject I'd ever attended. Until as a manager working for a large corporation, we had a speaker come in, and he spoke to us. That speaker was a West Point graduate. And what he did was poked at me, not in an unfriendly manner, but he sparked something. That spark was discussions of battles. And why is that more significant than what I had learned in school? Because in school, all I had learned were dates. I had learned the event. I didn't realize both sides. I didn't understand that the actual location of the battle had a meaning, and what it gave, what advantage it gave to one side over the other. We began to look at many of the items that had taken place, and while I did not immediately change, I began to understand why I needed to know both sides of the story, and had wished for more. But I was a chemist. I'm not going to drop that in order to satisfy a momentary itch. Was not going to happen. But as we look at today, we see two black quarterbacks going against each other. And I wish them both well. I hope that both of them play their best game. Why is it taken until now? Because I remember one of my father's students, and I believe he played for the Green Bay Packers, and I believe it was Super Bowl II as I watched him. Why has it taken now for this to be the first matchup? This is what, the 57th meeting in which the two teams have met to claim what is a world title or the Super Bowl champions? We relish it. Millions of people are watching. And yet it's taken this long. Why? Because there was a time, and I can't say that we've completely passed that time, when somebody made decisions that were not fact-based. And what do I mean by that? There were people that would take the most talented quarterback that had ever set foot on the field and said, you must play wide receiver. Why? Because no white man is going to take orders from a black man. What do we see today? We see teams playing. The guard doesn't care who and what the tackle is, as long as that is the best tackle that can fill that spot. That brings life. That thing brings vibrancy. That's why I'm looking for this to be an exciting Super Bowl. Now, many of you are going to watch that game, and I understand the excitement of that. Many are going to miss it every week, because we come on and broadcast at 4 o'clock. There is a game that comes on at 4 o'clock. I'm a big football fan. I'm a Seahawks fan, whether they win or whether they lose, because that is a hometown team. I moved to the state of Washington. I have an allegiance there. Am I happier when they win? Yes. But I understand that it is a competition, and we look at it. And hopefully you'll look at it that way. Now, let me give you some information that may be valuable to you today, if not, maybe in the coming weeks. Because we come on this program every Sunday at 4 p.m. to discuss various subjects. We're brought to you by AmazingBlackHistory.com. That's one word, AmazingBlackHistory.com. And what that represents are posts that I put up every week, generally on Thursday. Every Thursday, I give you a brand new post that looks at a part of history that has been neglected. Either it has never been mentioned, or we've never known the other side of that history, or how it impacts us. And I found very deeply, this week I had just been absolutely beside myself with excitement. And I'll tell you why. Because the one event that got me started on black history was visiting Sutter's Mill, the site of the gold rush in 1849. Gold was discovered in 1848. And everybody seeking their fortune went in 1849. I went there in September 11th, 2012. And I remember the date. And I'm there. The weather is fantastic. The crowd is practically no one because all of the kids have gone back to school. I have the curator of the museum there. I'm normally shy. I'm normally at the back of any crowd. Maybe if I feel somewhat adventuresome, I may be in the middle of the crowd. But I asked him a question, and I remember exactly. And I emphasized one word. I said, were there any blacks here that played a significant role in Sutter's Mill? I knew that I had struck a nerve because a slow smile came over his face. He said, let me tell you about Nancy Monroe Gooch. That story changed my entire life. Why? Because I found out that, yes, there were people there, that they had owned a significant parcel of land, that they were doing well. It was later that I became acquainted with the family that I find out that they had had orchards and were wholesaling fruit all over the state of California. My idea, because of the lack of information, had every black person grouped together in the South picking cotton. You talk about a mix of emotions. Here I am, a very mature male who thinks that he's been educated, who thinks that he has been educated and provided him with information necessary for success, that they didn't hold anything back, that they had let me in on all of the secrets, only to find out that I had been dumbed down on purpose. And I didn't know whether to break out in a break dance, whether to shout and run around the museum and act a pure D fool, or whether to feel embarrassed at the fact that history had been withheld from me. I still experience some of these. And what does that have to do with the excitement that I'm having this week? The theme of this week is that we are talking about race riots and massacres. Race riots and massacres. That sounds like a macabre part of the story. But I found out several years ago, because my focus was on those vital things that we had done that nobody knew about. But I began to understand that unless you have the full picture, the highs, the lows, the curve, the fragrance of crops, the bugs hitting you in the face, so to speak, that you cannot fully appreciate the picture. You cannot fully appreciate life. What I found out is that part of the story, it is so blatantly lopsided, I didn't mean to make a racial innuendo at that point, that it is so blatantly messed around with, mismatched, and skewed to a point where we don't know history, that it's almost impossible to recognize the fact that when people say everybody had an equal chance of success in America, I say that's a bunch of horse feathers. Because now I know, and I want you to know as well, the story that I'm telling you is not to embarrass white people. It's not to do any of those things, because my feeling is that many of you have carried around a burden that ain't your burden to carry. And what do I mean by that? We have put race in a category where you do not talk about it. I have seen example after example where people have been embarrassed. And sometimes it's understandable, completely understandable, because sometimes even as a scientist, as a supposedly knowledgeable person, I don't know the answer. Was talking about an experience that my wife had. It was a while back. And a person was talking to her about race. And what had happened is that person's son had asked a stranger why were they wearing gloves. Innocent enough question. May have been one that I came up with. But the reason was the person's skin was a different color. The person was doing the absolute best that they could, but they could not answer that question. And so sometimes what we do is we tug on the kid's arm. We shush them up. There is an answer. And we'll talk about it in a different version of the show, not this one, only because I have so much information that I want to go through and time is short. Let me give you a phone number. I hope that you have pencil and paper handy. I try to give this to you every week. Hopefully you will use it. I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage today because I'm not sitting in front of my computer. I'm on the road. And I'm on the road because we had a family event. I have my wife, I have my daughter, and we were able to watch my granddaughter perform in a play. And I think it's important that people understand who and what they are, what abilities they have. They get support. And I think this goes across the board. There is absolutely nothing wrong with a black person giving encouragement to a white person and vice versa. After all, we are on the same team. If we don't do that, this is that quarterback saying, if you give anybody but me, I ain't going to play. I'm going to take my ball and go home. So what we attempt to do is to fill that in. Now, the number is 646-668-8217. Hopefully I'll give it to you again, but I want you to keep that number handy because as we do this show every Sunday at 4 p.m., 1 p.m. Pacific, I want you to be able to call in. It is not just a show of me calling. Why am I at a disadvantage today? Because I'm traveling back home. And as such, I don't have my computer in front of me. Normally, what happens, whether you're listening on your device, such including your smartphone, your tablet, your computer, or whether you called in on that number, I can't see you unless you called in on that number. That shows on my computer dashboard who has called in. I can open the microphones, I can close them. And what we do, or what we intend to do, is to allow you the opportunity to bring up your questions, your concerns, get answers to your questions. Everybody is not going to agree with me. This is not a agree with John show. There may be people that have valid reasons to question some of the information that's being given. What we don't want is a bunch of hate being spewed, profanity being spewed, because hopefully we have younger people listening as well. And I love younger people listening because they are in that formative stage where we say shut down when it comes to questions of race. We should be saying, open up. What are advantages that can come of this situation? Because there are advantages that can come of this situation. When we look at race riots when we look at massacres, we find that there are categories that they fall into. There are categories such as today's post and yesterday's post, which are part of a series within a series, because we're going to talk about the Tulsa riots. Approximately 102 years ago, America had one of its most disruptive race riots. Hundreds of people were killed. Thousands of people were displaced. Why? Because a white woman screamed. And why did she scream? Nobody knows. She was an elevator operator in downtown Tulsa. Tulsa was so strictly segregated that they didn't even want black people to come downtown. But there was a shoeshine individual, I don't want to call him boy because that has a derogatory sound to it, in my opinion. But we had a person that did that for a living. And I admire that person. Why? Because they were doing something positive to provide for themselves, to provide for their family. And as long as it's good, honest work, I support it. What I don't support is groups of people making decisions such as they did on the quarterback problem that we talked about earlier that are full of foolishness. A bunch of men. A bunch of who shot who when it's not necessary. Let the people compete on the field. Let their actions speak for them. Give them the opportunity. If they can make it, they make it. If they can't make it, somebody else can. And I feel heartbroken, almost sick, for those people who had the ability, but no chance to operate. When we look at what happened in Tulsa, we know that this man had permission to use one of the few restrooms available to him in all of Tulsa. Why? Because of the color of his skin. In those days, we didn't have automatic elevators like we do now. I just left the hotel. I stepped into an open door, nobody there. I pushed the button and I went to the floor that I wanted. In those days, we had not progressed to that point. We had operators. We had people operating the elevator. They were more complicated to operate than they are today. Like I said, all I had to do was push a button and I went where I wanted to. When I got there, the door opened. I was allowed to get off. If I were in the door and in danger of the door closing, the elevator moving, it would stop. Those features had not been developed or implemented at that time. So what happens? This white woman screams. Everybody gets their underwear in a bunch because of the possibility that she may have been, or something else went on. We don't know. Because she never pressed charges. Dick Rowland, the individual that was there, was swept away to save his life. Now, what kind of country is it where we have to rush people out of town in order not to go through a proceeding, but because of an allegation and the possibility of what somebody thinks may have happened? This is a horrible situation, folks. But unless we discuss it, unless we get to the point where we are willing to discuss facts, we're not going to go past it. So for 100 years, nobody knew, well, people knew about the event. Most people never knew about the event. It came up partially because it was a 100-year anniversary. And some people decided to expose the situation. What happened? Why do we have hundreds of people murdered, slaughtered, including men, women, and infant children? Because of the hysteria that developed. what happened? How do we end up with thousands of people homeless? What happened is that people in the black community, sometimes called Greenwood, were entrepreneurs, as we have been forever. We were trading. Remember, we did not come over here as slaves. We came over here as enslaved people. But we had educational institutions. Sometimes when you go to Amazing Black History, look up places like Timbuktu. Timbuktu was a mecca, a center of education, a city of over 10,000 people, and fully 25% of them were educators or students. Educators or students. We make great deal of Pythagoras. Pythagoras went to Africa to study. There is nothing to be ashamed of there. There is nothing to be ashamed of. We sometimes feel ashamed because we don't know our history. So what we do is we expose events like this. There were people in airplanes dropping fuel to set houses on fire. Now, before the houses were burned, people were jealous of the fact that some of these people, because of their entrepreneurship, were able to have grand pianos in their house. They were able to have fineries that we normally don't see in a normal house. But these were black people. Now, we have gone through a period of history. Most people never knew this fact either. When a person was freed in the early days, in the days of slavery, in the days before the end of the war, even after the end, I cannot say after the end of the war, but when they were freed beforehand, and we understand that the wife may be owned by a different person than the husband and vice versa, and the children may be owned by someone else. Owned! That means they had complete control of them. When that person was freed, man, woman, or child, they generally had 1 year, 365 days to get out of the state. Why? Because they did not want people to see anybody free. They didn't want anybody to pick up an idea. This is part that said it is a crime to teach any black person, slave or free, to read or write. That provided two things. Not only did it provide and limit the ability to communicate, it took off the ability to calculate. We made such a great ballyhoo over the fact that we had, in many cases, sharecropping agreements. But what good is an agreement if it is not fair? What is not fair about it? The landowner often paid you, but paid you in scrip that only he could fulfill. When he had a company store, or she had a company store, there was often a 30 to 60% markup on everything in that store. You weren't paid in scrip that you could go down the street and save 60% on. No. And they beat you to death with a pencil. So we find that one group of things there had to do with that single act of jealousy and greed, as we see in Tulsa. We see in other places, and I have not posted this yet, but this one will probably be coming out this week. We had a situation in Hamburg, South Carolina, H-A-M-B-U-R-G, named after the city in Germany, I believe it is, that was a cotton trading center. And we had people there that wanted to vote. They wanted to vote. And as a result, they went into the offices to vote, and they were trapped there by white people intent on denying them the right. How do you think we honor that site, that skirmish, that particular event? You're right. They put up a monument to support the three black killers. Excuse me, the three white killers, the ones that are responsible for the death of 100 black people. Is that the America you think you have been living in? Is that where you think we are? Now let me bring up something else that I want you to be very, very aware of. When we do this show, it's recorded. I don't know how long the recording remains available, but you can always go back and listen to it. You can share the link because there are other people that need to hear the information. Often there is information on AmazingBlackHistory.com that allows for a discussion. And what do I mean by that? I believe one of the reasons that we have not been told about our accomplishments is the fact that the quarterback has said, don't give anybody, any recognition except me. And we said, okay, that's fine. Sounds good to me. But it's a team headed to self-destruction. When we look at events such as Tulsa, such as Hamburg, we see a disparity there. But we buy into the story that everybody had the opportunity to survive. Everybody had the opportunity to thrive. And just the opposite is true. Because we've had hundreds of people killed. In this country, we look at anti-lynching laws. What is anti-lynching? That is denying a person any possibility of freedom and justice for all. Because the mere accusation, such as we talked about in the case of Dick Royale, if they had gotten their hands on him, he would have been slaughtered. Let's look at the case of Omaha, Nebraska. How in the world do we get from the South to the middle of the country, Omaha, Nebraska? Because in the... Excuse me, I think I've got the date correct on this. I believe it was 1919. And what we had were soldiers returning from war. Most of them were assigned based on somebody's belief that we didn't have the ability to fight, that we couldn't follow directions, that we couldn't give orders. In other words, we were so stupid that we couldn't do it. But yet and still, in my hometown of Spartanburg, South Carolina, at one time we had the unit that has fought longer than any other unit. I didn't say any other black unit. I said longer than any American unit. They fought 191 straight days. And out of that, they're one of the most decorated. One of the participants in that war was a guy by the name of Henry Johnson. Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts were on sentry duty. And it is reported, we don't know the exact number, but they fought in hand-to-hand combats up to 30 German soldiers and chased them off yelling into the night. They ran away. This is why the 369th was known as the Hellfighters. It's not a name they took for themselves. They wanted to be known as the Rattlers, like rattlesnakes. Don't step on me. If you do, you're in big trouble. But this is the name bestowed upon them. As we look at their record, we find that they never gave up an inch of ground, never gave up so much as 2.54 centimeters if you're in that frame of mind, never gave up any. And were one of the most decorated, and they were decorated after going into war under a general, Black Jack Pershing, who said that we will all fight under one flag, our flag, the American flag, except for the blacks. Anybody that wants them can have them. Fortunately, the French had fought with the Senegalese from Senegal in Africa and knew the capabilities. Where did the French get into trouble? The white soldiers practically mutinied, rallied, and said, don't give credit to the black soldiers. This is that quarterback standing up saying, you had better not give any credit to anybody except me. This is why it's important. We look at World War II. One of the most significant advances during World War II that saved countless lives and still continues to save countless lives today was the development of the blood bank, development and use of blood plasma. Because many of our soldiers were dying of shock on the field, couldn't get to medical facilities that could save their lives. And what happens? A black physician by the name of Charles R. Drew developed the blood bank. Why is that significant? Because soldiers returning from World War II, World War I, said, I am a man as well. I deserve what's coming along. And we see another category where these people fighting for what they believed they had fought for, had given up lives. There were people in these foxholes and trenches that had given their life. They had had close friends who had lost arms, legs, eyes, you name it. It's happened. They said, I deserve some citizenship. They came back and they ran into a system of white supremacy, which gave us another reason that we had many of the race riots and massacres. When we look at South Carolina, we don't understand the role that South Carolina played, but we had a sergeant be discharged at Fort Gordon, Georgia, on his way home in uniform, asked to use the restroom. Now, understand, restrooms for people in those days, and we're talking about the mid-40s. We're talking about during my lifetime. Denied the opportunity to get off the bus and use the restroom. Why? Whites were able to do it. The bus was conveniently parked for the whites. The blacks had to go around the building and probably use an inferior, infrequently cleaned toilet. The driver cussed at me because, as is custom, so many times you are discriminated against and you are done so in the harshest terms, sometimes even physical violence, to the point that the bus driver, all he had to do was call the sheriff. Sheriff says, whatever your problem is, we're not going to research it and find out if you're right or wrong. We're going to come down there and take some action. The sheriff, Shull, himself came onto the bus and gouged out both of the eyes of Sergeant Woodard, both of them. The man remained blind the rest of his life. Anything done? No. This causes conflict. Part of the conflict is the fact that upon hearing this, President Harry Truman made changes and integrated the forces. There were people who said, when Harriet said this, that, okay, we've heard other presidents say this. Somebody remarked, yeah, but he means it. We came out with, I believe it was Executive Order 9981, which did this, which made this change. Because, again, whether we are on the receiving end or not, these types of activities resulted in actions, race riots, massacres. In, as you look at today's post, there are, at 100 years after the event, three people still living with the scars, living with the information that was etched into their very soul, and nobody was found. Because they're not going to waste time looking for people who violate the constitutional rights of black people. We look at World War II again. We see soldiers. Let's take Mississippi, for example. There were soldiers. 2,000 white soldiers were able to benefit from the GI Bill. Now, I have absolutely no animosity to them. I think they deserved everything that they got. Now, this was a national program, but was allowed to be administered on a local level. What is wrong with that? Okay, let's look at numbers. 2,000 white people were able to benefit. How many blacks? Two. Not 2,000. Not 200. Not 20. We're talking about two. Let's look at statistics of soldiers being discharged. Remember, I told you that there were soldiers that had lost limbs, had lost eyes. When they mustered out, the maximum percentage of disability they were given was 29%. Why such an odd number, 29%? It's very logical, because at 30%, you receive a pension. We made sure that no matter how bad you were injured, you didn't get a pension. You didn't get benefits. You didn't get full results of citizenship. So we look at these events. When we go back to Omaha, there was a movement of people to go to Omaha. Why? Because Omaha was a meatpacking capital. Thousands upon thousands of people had jobs in the meatpacking industry. When we find the individual that is the topic of one of the previous days, and I cannot remember his name at this point, and I'm not going to stress myself worrying about coming up with that when it is so accessible. Because on this post, if you look at the latest post, there is a link to take you to all of the posts, every one of them. What black people wanted was the same thing that white people wanted. They wanted a chance to better themselves. So they went there in search of jobs. One of the people, and I'm not going to go into the details of this, because we think if a person ever gives a statement, that it must be true. We're finding the techniques used by police are, in many cases, anything except fair. They're not fair. And they are designed to, one, incarcerate these people, incarcerate people, because no matter, and we're talking about a current battle going now. There is a battle, and we're not talking about guns, rocks, knives, or whatever. Let me divert, because this is a funny story that happened the other day. At least it's funny to me. I'm in Virginia, and in the sky, there is a hot air balloon. a hot air balloon. And I can just imagine that as partisan as we are in a country, that a particular party is probably out with every gun that they've got trying to shoot this thing out of the air. Those that don't have guns probably using slingshots and rocks and bottles, and it's more of a danger to people on the ground than it is to those in the air. But let me go back to where I started, because partisanship in many cases is based on the lack of information. And I'm not talking about this being a one-way street. It is a two-way street. And we need to understand. I probably spend more time in bipartisan research than most people spend in their partisan kingdom, a dome, or whatever bubble they have built around them, where they won't listen to anything else. I understand the value. Yes, sometimes it drives up my blood pressure. Sometimes it makes me want to jump up and shout and do all kind of stuff. But it is necessary for my point of view on understanding what is the issue. How can anybody see this differently? What is there? Is there any rationale over there? And if there is, let me discover it. If we can sit down and have a rational decision, we can solve problems. One of my brief editorials said today, or recently, that when we look at history, we need to understand the facts. We need to understand the pros, the cons. We need to discuss them. And I'm going to paraphrase from JFK. Not because they're easy, but because the benefits are part of the formula for success for all the team. All the team. We are in a game that is dependent upon every person doing their job, every man, every woman, every child. We need to bring our children up to be critical thinkers. This is how we get to the point where we are. I was just watching news in the last couple of weeks and see where the police were called on a young girl because she had a spray bottle and was spraying bugs. Yes, you heard me right. A 9-year-old girl spraying bugs who has the police called on her. Now, if you are aware, and we did a post on qualified immunity, how that protects police, and did not start out that way. Let me mention a little bit about qualified immunity and how things can get so convoluted. Blacks were being killed. They were being massacred. They were being tortured. And all manner of ill treatment was taking place. So in 1871, a law was passed. You may have heard it referenced. The Ku Klux Klan Act. That was supposed to protect American citizens that were subject to such discriminatory treatment, even including the violation of their civil rights. Violation of constitutional rights. This is going back. We're talking about freedom, liberty, and justice for all people. But it was not happening. That law then becomes qualified immunity. Qualified immunity is not a law. It's a rule handed down by judges that didn't have enough backbone to make a decision. And it's perpetrated even today. Let me give you an example of qualified immunity. That rule says that people must be placed on notice that what they are doing is not right. What they're doing is not right. Let's take a case of a man who surrendered to police. The policeman sicked his dog on this man, causing horrible, painful injuries, permanently maiming this man for life. The judges looked at this case, and there are two prongs. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them, but they can take them in any order. Now, most of us listening to this broadcast would think that you know that it's not right to sick a dog on a person who has surrendered to you. This person is laying on the ground, surrendering. The court would not take the case because there has not been a similar case to let people know that this shouldn't happen. I don't know if they're trying to protect the dumbest people on the face of the earth or what is going on. We have another case that happens in the same jurisdiction. An individual surrenders to police. He's sitting with his hands in the air. The officer sticks the dog on him. Again, multiple painful, permanent injuries. What does the court do? The court says this is not similar enough to the first case that the second person should have been on notice that this wasn't right. But in this hidden menagerie of stuff that should be in an outhouse, should be in our septic system, should be in our sewer system, neither one of these cases qualifies because the court did not rule that they were a factor that should be considered in the future. So where are we? We are at square one. We had a case involving a prisoner who was placed in a cell smeared with feces, human feces, on the floor, on the walls, on the windows. Again, the court says there is no clear and present case. So we're back to square one. Rule on it? No. We're not going to do that. This person was then moved to a cell, and it was incorporated as part of the first one, into a cell, no heat, no furniture. The only place to lay is on the floor. The problem with that, there's a drain in the floor. That drain backs up, and sewage comes into the cell. Again, same thing. No, can't make a decision on this because there has not been one like this. We'll use this as the first case. No, we don't have to do that. Go fly a kite. These are the problems that lead to where we are today. Now, when we talk about this, I don't blame you. I don't blame you for slavery. But I want to bring up one example. The case that we have on AmazingBlackHistory.com involving Homer Plessy and the case known as Plessy v. Ferguson. Who was Ferguson? Ferguson was the judge that ruled in this case. This is a case that Frederick Douglass said, don't take to court because it can blow up. But people could not see how this case could blow up. What it involved in the fact that on streetcars, and the streetcar companies had protested, they did not want this law because it said that you must have separate cars for black and white citizens. In this particular case, Homer Plessy, of his great-grandparents, one of which was black, Homer Plessy didn't look black at all. He had no features, hair, skin. skin color, eye color, nothing indicated that he was anything except 100% white. Plessy sat on a car in the white section of the train, was asked, had to be asked now, because what they were attempting to do was to show how absurd it was to have a streetcar conductor determine the race of an individual. They had to have the question come up. Plessy was asked if he were white or black, whatever, and basically said no. He was arrested. And the case came up that essentially said black people have absolutely no right, which a white person under law has to respect. None. Zero. Zilch. Nothing. That case was so bad that attorneys are still arguing today as to whether that is the most stupid case that the court has ever ruled on. It was not overturned until Brown v. Board. Linda Brown versus the Board of Education, well, it was not Linda Brown, it was her father. We won't go into that case either, but South Carolina played a major role in that case. So we go back to Plessy v. Ferguson that ruled, well, in Brown case, they ruled that segregation was unlawful because it denied the full experience to everyone. So let's go back to Plessy v. Ferguson. Why do I bring this up? Because when we look at the subject of race, I tell you up front, I don't blame you for the racist actions of your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your great-great-grandparents, because I couldn't stop them and neither could you. But what is so important and what is so vital in this instance is the fact that there is now a group that has been formed, and has been formed by the descendants of Homer Plessy and the descendants of Judge Ferguson. It is called Plessy and Ferguson. And the reason this is significant is because what they are doing is making corrections for the future. They're doing what they can. Now, when I say that I don't blame you, I don't. But pardon me if I look at you sideways, if you're not going to join with me to at least discuss it and possibly look at things that can be done to eliminate the disparities that has cost hundreds and thousands of people their lives. When we look at the anti-lynching bill, over 4,000 acknowledged lynchings have taken place in this country. And it has taken us over 100 years to get a law that basically says you can have a trial if you are accused. Before that, it was in the hands of mobs, angry mobs. Your very life, your very living. Now, at this point, excuse me, I don't know if I have anybody manning the switchboard or not. I asked a friend to do so this morning. I did not get a response back. I hope that it is done. But here's what we're going to do. If that person is listening, they will open the microphones. If they are not, I will make sure that we have time next week or at some time with extra time for your questions, because they are important. Not just important for me, not just important for you, but important for all of us. Because the fact that this information has been hidden is the root of the problem that we face. It's almost like saying, going to the doctor, saying, doctor, Give me the news. If it's bad news, I don't want to hear it. If I have a dreaded disease that can be taken care of easily, don't tell me. Tell me it's a cold. Because if I don't know about it, it ain't going to bother me. I'll live forever. What? There's no what? Say what you're going to say, Ruth. Oh, okay, I guess there's no call in. I don't know whether any of the microphones are open because I've heard a sound. If they are open, anybody that has questions, comments, please speak up. Anybody? It sounds like the mics are open, but evidently they're not. It must be a figment of my imagination. Here's one thing that I do want to say about that. Sometimes we get to a point where there is a gross misunderstanding, and I will have to apologize for my part in this, because when we give or make requests, we need to follow up on them to see if they're being implemented. In this case, I guess it was not. But I did not
The line was open. No one called in. That's what
I
text your wife.
I misunderstood the message. It was passed to me. Okay, thank you. Any comments that you may have?
No, not at this time.
Okay. But what I say is sometimes as a leader, we are responsible for that miscommunication. Because in this case, I didn't check back. A message came through that said that no one had called in. I'm sure that we have listeners. But again, if you are listening or not, remember that these broadcasts are recorded. Go back, listen to them, share them with friends and others. But many times we get caught up in our own underwear. And like I said, I am not immune from this, because we'll give somebody an assignment or make a request. We don't follow through. And then at the last minute, we're all caught short. Now, sometimes we see this, and I'm going to put it out exactly as it comes up. People make a comment. Those, your people. Yeah, they're my people. I accept them. I understand that in many cases, people don't fully understand what is expected, and we don't follow up, and we miss. That does not mean that we are incapable. It means that we need to tighten up our ship. And with that, I think my friend that was on the line that was able to open them up, unfortunately, I think the Super Bowl probably won out, but I cannot even say that because we have people that regularly listen, but they do so with devices. And again, the only thing that you miss that way is the fact that I cannot see you or interact with you. If you do have questions, use that number. There are other programs that come on. Crown talking drums, in which are designed for the enlightenment of our people. Many of them are spiritually based. Many of them are factually based. I do have Christian principles, because my principle is that we were all created by the same person, a person that, to the best of my knowledge, the best of anything that I have ever known is perfect. And I do not think would create people that are not. Sometimes we have to step up. Sometimes we have to say, am I the one that you want? We look at Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King did not go to Montgomery as a leader. He went as a minister. But he was called upon. He stepped forth and understood that by acting, by studying, by actually putting life into what was there, that he was that chosen leader. But we have people listening right now that have the capability of making the changes that are essential in our life. I thank you for listening, and I hope that you join us again next week and every week thereafter, because this, the post for today on Amazing Black History, is part 12 of 28. We are looking at this situation that has been so well hidden. And don't forget March. March, the month immediately following February. Oh, I'm sure that I informed you on that. But it's Women's History Month. And during Women's History Month, we're going to highlight 38 absolutely amazing women that you will be proud of, whether you're black, white, or anything else. We focus on people that have moved those hindrances, those boulders out of their way and succeeded. And these people can be mentors. They can be models, role models for all of us, regardless of our race, religion, heritage, or anything else. It has been my pleasure to be with you. I hope to see you again next week. To those of you that use your devices, God bless you. To those of you who call in, God bless you. This is a community, and we look to enlighten all members of that community. We're not here just for people of color, because there are good-hearted people that sometimes just don't know and want to know. And we look for them. We welcome them with open arms. It has been a pleasure to be with you. Look for Crown Talking Drums. If you have email, I believe it is Crown Talking Drums 12. I'm not sure. If Apostle Armstrong is there, he can clarify that. If not, I'll make sure that I give you that next week. Are you there with the email address, Apostle? I guess we had enough for him. I just got hit by my daughter. I don't know what that means, but we will see you next week. All be blessed. All be blessed. It's my pleasure to hopefully enlighten you, to allow you a source of information, allow a source of questions, comments that can be of benefit to all. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.